Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hey, Negotiations Ninja listeners, got a special show for you today. We've actually got Dr. Joshua Weiss on the show. He's a negotiation and conflict resolution expert, senior fellow at the Harvard Negotiation Project. You're going to hear more about him when he introduces himself, a little bit about his background. But the reason that we've got him on the show is actually to talk about the current situation that we're in between the Democrats and the Republicans and this issue with the wall, which seems to be, at least from the outside looking in, a giant mess. And Josh got some really good exposure in the Boston Globe talking about how both parties could potentially handle the situation and handle it a lot better. My hope is, by the time that this airs, that the government will be reinstated as it's currently shut down. And actually, during this specific recording, they came to a deal to reopen government for a three-week period. So hopefully by the time that this airs, this is going to be a non-issue, but it's very interesting to hear what a negotiation expert, political expert like Josh Weiss would do and what advice that he would give to both parties to get past this and to create a deal that works. So it's going to be a really, really interesting show. Thank you so much for listening. Would love to hear your feedback on it. Enjoy. Hi, Joshua. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Mark. How are you?
I am super well, my friend. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
We're going to have a ton of fun today because I think this topic, obviously, as current as it is, needs to be discussed. And I saw your wonderful coverage that you got on in the Boston Globe. And that sort of forced me to reach out and say, hey, you've got a great take on this. How do we handle this situation with the wall and the Democrats and the Republicans fighting? And it seems to be, at least from the outside looking in, a giant mess. But before we get into that, I wonder if you could tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, and how you got to be on the show.
Sure. Well, my name is Josh Weiss, and I grew up in the Boston area. From a professional point of view, I started working in the world of negotiation, dealing with conflict, leadership, etc., about 30 years ago. I got my PhD in something called conflict analysis and resolution, which many of your listeners probably don't even know exists. And, you know, really focused in particular when I started out at the international realm, but got more and more involved in negotiations writ large, because negotiation has a common thread that runs through most realms. Obviously, there's a complexity that gets added in different places, et cetera. But I currently wear sort of three hats. The first hat is that I co-direct a project at Harvard called the Global Negotiation Initiative with a colleague of mine named William Urey, and we work on some of those international negotiation efforts. The second hat is that I direct a master's degree program in leadership and negotiation at a smaller school in Western Massachusetts where I live called Bay Path University. And that program is all online, so you can learn to lead, negotiate, deal with conflict in a virtual way. And the third is that I have a consulting company. So I spend a lot of time working with very different types of entities, from for-profit to nonprofit, government to universities, and you name it. And I think one of the things that's been most fascinating to me is diving into those worlds and seeing the connections that you can make, and helping people to really think through their negotiations and the challenges when it comes to dealing with conflict or other kinds of issues related to that in a strategic manner. And I think that's often what's lacking, is people sort of try to intuit their way through it, and that doesn't work very well.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of winging it.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And that's sort of how I feel we got to this point, actually, with the wall and the negotiation that's going on right now between the Democrats and obviously the Republicans that's forced the shutdown of the government. And it's obviously mm-hmm. had an immense impact, not only on the government, but also on everyone else. I myself am a business traveler. So now when I go through a TSA line, I'm impacted by that because there's not as many employees handling that line anymore. And who can blame them? Many of them aren't getting paid. Walk us through maybe the timeline of the events at a high level. How did we get to this point where the government is now shut down?
Well, I mean, it is symptomatic of a broader issue and problem in terms of the divisiveness that exists within the country. But around this particular issue, you know, negotiations actually started on all of this back in September of 2017, where there were a number of proposed deals that were on the table, and they were what is often kind of described as a bit of a grander bargain. The thought was that, you know, that there would be some kind of deal where for the Democrats, they would be able to find a way to get DACA recipients a path to citizenship in exchange for border security funding and other pillars that would go into immigration reform. And I think, you know, one of the interesting things is that there's actually a reasonable amount of consensus that the immigration sort of system needs some reforming, but you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You look at the situation and you say, what's not working and what is? And so there were a lot of efforts to go down that road. In January of 2018, there were bipartisan meetings with a proposed deal that had a number of pillars around DACA, family-based migration, the diversity lottery, and border security. And there was a thought that that deal would hold. And Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham came to the White House with this compromise, and that got rejected. And later in January, you know, Chuck Schumer actually, the Democratic senator, actually offered Trump $20 billion for the wall in exchange for a DACA pathway. And that led to a couple of days shutdown in the government, which opened up, you know, just a few days later. And there was another effort in February and March to make DACA and the border deal be part of this larger omnibus bill that mm-hmm. was being put forward. And in the end, it was excluded because they couldn't reach agreement. So this is, you know, it's had its roots in a lot of conversation to this point. I mean, how did we get here? I think in general, we got here because of the negotiation approach that's being taken, in particular by President Trump, but also by the Democrats now, which we often call a positional approach to negotiation. Right? So a positional approach is one where you really take a stance, like, I want a wall, and you dig in, and the other side says, well, you're not going to have a wall, and they dig in. And we never get down to creativity. And a positional approach to negotiation can work in certain circumstances. It often works in one-off negotiations, such as real estate deals, which is what Donald Trump is used to. And I think he's taking that model of negotiation and bringing it to a governmental sphere. And I believe that that's why hasn't had nearly the kind of success that I think people thought he might, because government doesn't work that way. The kinds of tactics and tricks that go along with the positional way of negotiating might get you something in the short term, but over the longer term, they damage the relationship. And in government, you end up having to work with these entities over and over again on different issues and different challenges. So I think a big reason why we are here is because the wrong approach to negotiation is being used. And the parties themselves are caught in a cycle, in an escalatory spiral where they're now engaged in tit for tat kind of things, like, you're not going to do the State of the Union here. Oh, okay, well, you're not going to fly to Afghanistan, was the retort, right? And so we get stuck in this way of thinking and doing without the ability to be creative. Because if you look at this question, the underlying interests, the underlying needs that are at play around immigration reform, there's a whole host of ways of reaching a smart, comprehensive deal that would actually improve the system and keep America safe, if we use that language.
Yeah, there seems to be no shortage of potential solutions. And you spoke about interest-based negotiation sort of being that starting point for creating those creative solutions. When people think of the differences between positional negotiation and interest-based negotiation, if you were going to try and get either party out of the mindset of positional negotiation, what would you tell them about, you know, how to drive for those creative solutions in terms of looking for the interests of the other party? How would you coach them through that?
Well, I think one thing that's really important to recognize is that in any deal that gets done, both sides have to save face. They have to come out of it and say, I won, especially in this day and age. Right. Because the reason there isn't an agreement is because each side is looking at its base, and its base is saying, don't compromise. So what each side needs to do, and we often talk about this as being able to give a victory speech to your constituents. And so each side would have to be able to come up with a deal that would enable them to still go back to their constituents and say, look what we got here. So I would, you know, that would be a very important part of that, is getting them thinking, what does that look like? And also getting them to recognize that that's going to have to happen for the other side. Otherwise, they're just not going to say yes. It's that simple. But what I would do is I would say, look, the wall is one piece of this. And I would really try to get them focusing on what are the other things that would really enable you to focus on border security in a comprehensive way that would actually make a significant difference. So that, imagine if you came out with a 5 or 6 pronged negotiation solution for immigration reform, and it was smart and it picked up on a lot of the research that's been done about what would really work. I think a lot of people would be able to claim victory around that. And I think a lot of people would applaud it and say that this is actually a very useful solution for us, as opposed to, you know, one avenue. Like, a wall isn't going to change things dramatically. It might have an impact in certain places and things like that. It's always debatable, right? But it has to be comprehensive. There has to be resources for the security personnel that are around there. There has to be a focus on what is it, for example, when it comes to asylum or refugees, that might not be working, and is there a better way to do that? So when you get into some of the nuance and the meat of this, you can find a lot of ways forward. So I would really encourage them to think much more broadly and think much more about those underlying motivations and those underlying needs that are really there, that could be negotiated in a much different and more effective way.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I'm wondering, though, can that even happen now? Because, I mean, there's been such conditioning by the Republican side to say, hey, wool equals security. And so the public is now, at least their base, is now saying, okay, if no wool, then no deal. And so we're stuck in this position now of basically being stuck in a position. And so I wonder how the Republicans could potentially save face by not building a wall. And is it an option for the Democrats to say, okay, we'll agree to the wall? Like, this seems like such a massive linchpin, mm-hmm. at least to someone from the outside looking in. It almost seems non-solvable.
Well, look, I mean, you know, in a positional way of negotiating, you take an extreme approach and then you concede. You know, that's part of the deal. So I think you've already heard President Trump say, well, it could be a metal fence with slats in it. It could be this, it could be that. You know, and some of the conversation about the wall has been, well, maybe this is the first round of funding for the wall or something like that. And I think that some of those nuances could be utilized, because I think there's a way of framing a lot of this when it comes forward, and there will be a way of framing it. And I think, you know, for the Democrats, I think for them, you know, part of this is being seen as really pushing for the things that they want. And, you know, there is sort of quite a bit of history that also shows that some Democrats are for walls along part of the border in key spots and things like that. So, I think the key is in part to move away from the all or nothing and say, okay, yeah. Look, here's a section where maybe a wall would be helpful, right? We have these other places where there are tunnels, where people are using drones to drop drugs over the border. I mean, and furthermore, if you know the data around immigration, 60% of immigrants come to this country through ports of destination, so legal entry points, particularly airports. And so walls don't really help there. So what I think you do is you say, okay, let's have some security fencing, some walls in some strategic places, but let's really, let's not have a simple solution for a complicated problem. And I think that's the part from my point of view that I think is most dangerous here, is that if you come out and you create a negotiated solution, that is funding a wall or something like this, it's very likely not to work,
right?
Because it's not, this is a complicated issue. And there's a great quote by H.L. Mencken who said, for every complex problem, there's a simple, concise answer that's wrong. And from my point of view, that's what you want to avoid here. There's a lot of pressure to reach a deal, but it's not just getting to yes in any way, shape, or form. It's getting to the right yes.
Right.
And the right yes requires that you see this problem in a multifactorial way, and you, think carefully about how do we, address each one of these in a manner that actually is going to advance us further down the road.
Hey, listeners, we're going to get back to your show in just a moment, but first, I want to invite you to the ProcureCon Indirect East Conference that's happening this March 25th through 27th at the Omni Amelia Island Resort, where you will save 25% off of the existing price with the following promo code. So you got to enter this in when you buy your ticket. It is PIE19N. N, that's N as in negotiations and N as in ninja. ProcureCon Indirect East provides you with the critical strategies that you're going to need to prepare for the future of procurement. You'll attend 40 plus interactive sessions led by 80 plus inspiring speakers, including yours truly, who are transforming the procurement function at some of the world's largest companies, all while meeting with 300 or more of your peers who are excited to benchmark, talk shop, and obviously have some fun as well. So register with the code PIE19NN to get 25% off your ticket price. I'm going to include a link for this in the show notes so that you guys can easily access it. I really hope to see you there. And now back to your show. No, I agree with you. There also, you spoke about saving face. There's a lot of ego involved here too, right? I mean, whether you're talking about Pelosi or you're talking about Trump, there's a significant amount of ego on either side. And so being able to save face and help potentially save that ego is
right.
Going to be really, really important. And at a certain point, I think, it sounds like a terrible thing to say, but I think both sides need to grow up a little bit and be a little bit more mature about this and get over themselves, because it's not really, I know that sounds terrible, but it's not really about them, right? It's not about what they can achieve. It's about what they can achieve for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And at least it seems that way to me.
I think that's right. I think that when you engage in the positional negotiation approach, you get hemmed in, and it does in part become about you because you're so rigidly holding to a position that your ego gets tied to it. I mean, Trump
right.
even said in a closed door meeting with Schumer and Pelosi that if he doesn't get any funding for the wall, he'd be too embarrassed, and he can't do that. Right. So it is about ego. And it's interesting, just in case you don't know, in real time, they've reached a deal to reopen the government for 3 weeks. As of right now. Now, it's interesting, and actually, to me, the linchpin and the reason this is happening right now is because of what happened at LaGuardia today. So they started to cancel flights and they started to shut down parts of the airport because the air traffic controllers couldn't keep up. And so I was fairly certain that something like this would happen, that they would reach a short-term funding plan to open the government and keep negotiating. Now, that could be a good, it's a good thing without question for the federal workers who have been suffering and been the pawns in the middle of this game. From a negotiation point of view, it's a blessing and maybe a curse. The blessing is that, again, you know, these people's lives are not being torn apart by something like this. The curse is that the government shutdown was forcing people to begin to become more moderate in their stances. So what you saw this past week was two bills that were proposed in the Senate that were both rejected, and they knew that they would be rejected. But what the parties were doing with those bills was they were trying to send a signal to the other side that, you know what, we got to do something. And so will there still be that urgency to get a deal done? So you've got 3 weeks now. Okay, so you have a clear deadline. Deadlines can often be very helpful. But what will change the dynamic? You know, what's going to be different over the next 3 weeks than now? And one of the things that I, you know, you asked me a little bit before about what would you encourage them to do? One of the things I would encourage them to do, which is a very common thing when we work with negotiations that are high profile in the public, is we say to the parties, we want you to not speak in public. We want you to cease any negotiating in the public sphere or taking positions in the press. Because when you take a position in the press, again, we're back to face saving. If you have to come off of that to try to reach some kind of a deal, you might be seen as losing face.
Right.
So stop talking publicly about this. And I think that that's harder for politicians than anybody, but it would give you much more room to be creative about how you're actually going to solve this problem. So that would be a real core piece of advice that I would give them, is say, look, let's not say anything to the press until we really have something worth saying. And let's just not take these positions, because all they're doing is setting us back. They're not helping us to find the best solution to this problem. They're just locking us further into these stances.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I've been thinking through, and now with this real-time situation, of course, with the government being reopened for potentially 3 weeks and them coming to this deal, I was thinking about what the end game here is. You know, how could this end up? Where does this then lead to? So yeah. I would love for you to talk us through what you think maybe the best case situation is first.
Okay.
And then let's pair that against what we think would the most likely and the worst case situations.
Right. So obviously, you know, a best case scenario is the shutdown ends. So we're there now. But I think that, again, I think a shift to a more interest-based approach where people say, look, instead of digging back into where we were, let's really focus our attention on coming up with a smart plan for immigration reform. And one way to get there, and one way for President Trump to save face here, is, and I don't know if you've noticed in the last day or so, but basically Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer have been doing the negotiating.
Right.
And they've basically kind of said to the president, let us try to do this. And he said, if you come up with a deal, I'll sign off on it. And so far he has here, right? We've got something to open the government. So one way to go forward is to give this back to McConnell and Schumer and say, listen, you guys work this through. And you get agreement, again, from Trump that that he will sign off on something along those lines. So it takes some of the pressure off of him. It enables him to save face because that's necessary. I would think that would be the best case scenario here. I think the worst case, and then I'll go to the most likely. So I think the worst case is that the government stays, you know, sort of in 3 weeks, there's no agreement, and the government shuts down again. And that would add another layer of frustration to the problem, and people dig in further, and there's no end in sight.
Right.
That you know, that's really the worst case, because what happens with the reopening of the government now is that there's some optimism. There's, you know, people's expectations are getting raised that, okay, maybe we can, you know, with the pressure off, we can find a better solution. I think the most likely solution, you know, as I was thinking about this before this news, was that, you know, there would be some short-term kind of deal. And perhaps there's, you know, another deal in the works to keep the government open permanently while this gets negotiated through, so that, you know, those innocent folks, you as a consumer and others that, you know, have to use federal agencies and things along those lines are not impacted, and that they end up continuing to be able to work through something that ultimately will lead to smart reform. I think it's possible, you know, especially if you can perhaps really put this in the lap of the Senate or folks like that, and maybe take some of the protagonists who have been at the heart of this and you know, shift the players a little bit. I mean, In the end, some of those folks will still need to sign off, but I think that's one way of also taking the rhetoric down, is to, you know, bring in some different players who have not been going at each other in this way, which changes the dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, one of the key teachings in a lot of negotiation is, if you get to a stalemate situation, change the teams, right? Yeah. Just create that fresh situation so that people can look at it potentially from a different way, and there's not as much baggage associated, and then Hopefully you can come to some sort of a deal. Now, a lot of the listeners that are listening to this right now negotiate for a job. That's what they do. So they're either salespeople, or they're crisis negotiators in the police, or they are procurement people. And sometimes we find that we get ourselves stuck in these types of positions where we, you know, we have our egos attached to a particular outcome. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to the listeners so that they can maybe stop themselves from getting too deep into a particular position?
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is to be aware of the dynamic. You know, when we know that there's this positional way of negotiating, and if we see that we've tied ourselves to whatever that perspective is, and we're unwilling to come away with it, that's when you know you're trapping yourself. Mm-hmm. If I become rigid and inflexible, and I'm just categorically rejecting everything else instead of thinking, how do I meet my objective? You know, I often say to people that there's many paths to a solution. Like, you should be firm on your end goal, but you should have flexibility on how you get there.
Right.
And I think that in some ways is really important. And it helps you to stay away from a positional approach, because if I'm open to a number of avenues of how I get there, then I'm much less likely to be so set on one way, my way or the highway, that I won't get trapped. But there are also, you know, there are a lot of psychological dimensions. You know, when I talk to people about leadership, negotiation, dealing with conflict, I say, you know, half of your problems have to do with the other person and the dynamics involved, maybe time pressure or power or culture or whatever. But the other half are in you. And you have to understand those things because they play on you. Mm-hmm. You know, there are so many inherent biases that we have that we're not even aware of. And when you become aware of those things, they're much more easy to recognize, particularly in yourself. And one of the things that I do to help me stay out of positional traps is that I have sort of a negotiating buddy that I'll sit down with. I'll say, listen, here's what I want to get. Here's where we are. What are your thoughts? Like, bring to me, what assumptions am I making? Am I thinking about this in a way that's constraining me? Are there other ways to go with this? Because sometimes when you bring a fresh eye to a situation that's not in it, they're much more likely to be able to help you to see that maybe you're trapped. And in fact, when you talk to hostage negotiators, as I have as well, they often negotiate in teams that they can help each other to not get trapped by their own line of thinking or questioning or things along those lines. So, you know, it's not easy to always recognize it, but you can, especially when you know these different approaches and you choose, you know, one of the big mistakes I see people making is they choose the wrong negotiation approach for the situation they're in. Mm. And, you know, from the start, you need to be asking yourself. I mean, my rule of thumb is, generally speaking, if I'm in a one-off negotiation and I'm really sure it's a pretty one-off kind of deal, and it doesn't just look like it, because we live in a world with social media and all these other things where one-off negotiations, you know, sometimes aren't, even though they might look like they are.
Right.
If that's what you're in and the relationship really doesn't matter, then maybe a positional approach is okay. But it's funny because when I work with different groups, almost to a T, it doesn't matter what the industry is, it doesn't matter what the deal is. I'll say to them, how many of your negotiations are one-off versus with the same people over and over again? And the majority of people say about 90 to 95% of my negotiations are with the same people over and over again. And so if that's the case, then you've really got to think more in this interest-based, principled negotiation way of doing things.
Brilliant. I love it. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation, Josh, and I'm sure the listeners are going to want to, you know, obviously they're going to be watching what's happening with the wall, and hopefully you'll have some additional commentary on it in national news. But barring that, how do they follow you, and how do they follow your work?
Sure. Well, thank you for asking. So I am on social media, on Facebook, Twitter. My kids have finally got me into Instagram, and I'm on LinkedIn as well. So I'm more than happy to have folks follow me and to follow them back there. I also have a website, which is just joshuanweiss.com, that has the different things I do, the books I've written. I recently did a TED Talk on called The Wired Negotiator, which is about how do you negotiate most effectively with technology and through the different technological mediums. You know, sometimes people think that face-to-face is always best, and there's actually a number of reasons why using technology can be helpful for some people, particularly those people who find the negotiation process itself anxiety producing. So that's recently out and you can check that out. And then I've got a series of kids books that I've been working on the last few years. One, the first one was called Trouble at the Watering Hole, and it's for 5 to 10 year olds. And it's trying to use the power of story to teach kids how to deal with conflict productively. So, and the second one just came out. It's the same characters, a baby bear named Emo and a bird named Chicky. And they're kind of the heroes of the stories. But the second book is called Bullied No More. And they help a beaver who is being bullied by a wolf to try to manage that effectively. Because we live in a world as well where bullying is an unfortunate reality that exists. And we want kids to understand that they're not alone in dealing with these kinds of things, and that there are ways of solving them. So that's sort of what I've up to, and I'd love to connect with folks and continue engaging in interesting kind of conversations about all this. So
yeah,
critical.
I love that. That's awesome. The kids thing especially, I think, is super interesting, because so often I find it's, you know, how do we teach these valuable life lessons about conflict resolution, negotiation, getting what you need, helping the other party to get what they need, out of discussions that they have, you know, on the playground, you know, selling lemonade at a lemonade stand down the road, dealing with a bully. That's awesome. I'm so glad that you've written something like that, because I think we desperately need that. Awesome. Well, Josh, listen, thanks again so much for being on the show. I really, really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man. And for the listeners, I'll link out to all of Josh's things that he spoke about, including his website, his social profiles, places where you can buy the books. And yeah, listen, really enjoyed having you on. Have a great weekend.
Thanks so much, Mark. I appreciate you having me. Take care.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get, because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.